they're not ready. They need time. They need to make mistakes. Yeah. And when they make mistakes, they need encouragement.
Yeah.
But in chess, it's difficult because you need to come top four. Otherwise, it's a failure. You know, I can't complain. I reach very good levels. I believe that I could have reached more. But I think sometimes, being honest with myself, I could have done more to motivate myself to go even beyond that. No, Simon, I think it's not that. I think it's that, I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but I felt like that I wasn't deserving to be there.
So the nice guy accusation has merits.
Probably, I don't know, maybe it was my limitation, no?
This is Up Front with me, Simon Jordan. I believe there are a lot of vacuous, uninformed, unchallenged opinions out there. I want to get to the bottom line and cut through the nonsense. So with this podcast with William Hill, I'm going to get people with strong views who think they can stand them up to proper scrutiny. There's a good chance I might learn something along the way. And more importantly, so might you. Joining me in today's episode, one of the most iconic Italians to grace the Premier League. Learning under Diego Maradona in Naples, he formed part of English football's early foreign revolution. Famed for his audacious style of play, he became a firm favourite at Chelsea in their late 90s resurgence, with a host of cups to boot, before managing three English clubs under challenging ownerships. Gianfranco Zola, welcome to Up Front.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we start these conversations, we always try to get a little bit of understanding of the background with you guys that have gone on to be significant players or boxers or tennis players, in this instance, a football player. And your background is obviously coming from Sardinia,
yeah,
from a very small part of Sardinia. So how do you become a professional footballer that plays in the Premier League, plays for his national side, and operates with significant recognition and prominence?
Well, I think they all started with my father.
Was he a footballer?
No, he wasn't. Actually, he didn't have a clue what football was until he was 29, actually.
Okay.
Everybody was so passionate about football, and they convinced him to go and watch this game. And I think for him, it was like I said, it was like something special. He had so much fun that he became totally crazy. I think 2 years later, he became kind of the owner of the team in my small town.
Okay.
And when I was born and I was 3 years old, they used to take me all the time to the training sessions. And so my passion was started there, you know, going, seeing football every day and playing every day, and from being very small. And that's all I started.
When I was looking at some research about you, there seemed to be an unadulterated acceptance or desire from your side that football is what you wanted to do. And by that, I mean, I read that you didn't go to school. You preferred to play in the streets and play around with football with your friends from dawn till dusk. So with that in mind, was it always going to be football? Because if you weren't getting yourself in scholastic terms educated, you were putting all your eggs in one basket and being determined to be a footballer. Yeah. Was that how it was?
Kind of. I think I quit school when I was going to the secondary the college school. I was trying to graduate, but then all of a sudden I said, you know, this is not what I want, what my passion, what my intention, what my dreams are in football. So I would rather focus on that.
What age were you then?
I think it was I was 17 years old.
Right, okay.
So until then, you know, going to school, I was okay. I was not one of those, you know, nerds, if I can say that.
No.
Forgive me the word. But I used to do just the necessary to be there. You know, if you ask me what I was going to do at that time, I said, no, I was going to be a footballer. No doubt, I'll be a footballer. Maybe it didn't work, but it was worth trying for me, that path.
Did your ambitions extend to where you thought that journey might take you?
No, it just that, you know, I just loved waking up in the morning, doing my best to be better every day. That was my key. That's why I loved training all the time, my career. Wherever I've been, I love the playing, but as much as I love playing, I love training, because it was an opportunity for me to do something better that I did the day before.
Right.
And I knew that was a process. It would take me very far.
Yeah.
But if you tell me, you know, I had the vision to be a Serie A player rather than... It wasn't every day's my everyday thought. My everyday thought was, woke up, what I did yesterday. Well, I ran and I took the 10 shots and I scored 7. Well, okay, today I'm going to score 8. I'm going to try to score. If I didn't score 8, I would go through the process to understand why I didn't score 8.
Right.
So that was my mindset.
Yeah, very single-minded. Where were your parents in this? Was your father very much behind you and very much focused on what you were doing, or was he letting you just develop your own opportunities?
Well, my father was, as I told you, was a football mad at that time when I was there. So he was always very close to me.
Was he a pusher? Did he push
you?
No,
he wasn't.
No.
Absolutely not. That was probably one of the luckiest things I had. I had two very, very close to me in terms of helping me to do what I wanted, mm-hmm. but not pushing and telling me whatever you do. My father was not able to tell me what to do in football because he didn't have a clue what football was. I saw him once. I remember I saw him. I think it was the first time I saw him kicking a ball. We used to play in summertime. We used to play a tournament between in the town. Yeah. I think the first time he touched the ball, he tried to kick the ball and broke his knee. Because instead of
eating, so we don't need any advice.
No,
him,
he didn't have a clue. Honestly, so he didn't have the ability football wise to tell me what to do, but. He was always there, obviously,
to support
telling
you.
Me how to behave, how to treat other people, how to, be correct in a world that he needed me to be correct.
Excuse my pronunciation, so help me with my pronunciation. You land in one of two clubs in Serie C,
yes.
Right? Was it Norese?
Norese, yeah.
Norese?
Yes.
And you're there for a couple of years.
Yes.
And then you go to a slightly bigger club in Sassari Torres,
yes.
Sassari Torres, okay. And you're there for 3, 4, 5 years between the two clubs.
Yes.
You're now at 22 years of age, which is often, I mean, we've seen players in English football like Ian Wright land quite late, but normally if you've not really landed at a bigger club by the sort of time you're in your early 20s, most of the time you've missed the boat. I might be being a little bit over-exaggerating. What did you learn at the first two clubs before I get on to the move to Napoli? What did that engender in you? What did that enable you to develop and become?
You know, being born in a small town like myself and played, until I was 11 years old just on the streets, I didn't do the first part of the journey, which was the academy and a structured place where I could grow up. I think those 5 years with those team, Norese Torres, made me catch up with the journey that I didn't do before. I think it was very important for me because, I was talented, I was good, but I was very, I can say, rough.
Yeah.
Raw. I was a raw footballer. A lot of intuition, a lot of talent, but tactically not very good, not disciplined very much.
Right.
I used to chase the ball. I think that those 5 years... they helped me very much in this sense.
I think the reputation that precedes you, and before I get onto Napoli and the transfer, which must have been quite a remarkable thing, was that you played the game in a certain way, in what, for want of a better expression, you played it in a beautiful fashion. Did that matter to you, that the way you played the game?
Very much.
Yeah.
For me, that was paramount. That, I always said, no matter what I'm playing for, whether it's important or not important, I can be playing the cup final, but I want to be myself. And that was something that it was very important, especially at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because when I was playing in my own town, I was 16 years old and I was training with the adults.
Right.
And when you are 16, 17 years old and you play with adults, the adults want you to be very simple, just do the simple things. And I never did that. I said, I don't care whether they are happy or not. I'm going to do what I think is right, not what they think is the right thing to do. So that's the kind of thing I was talking about. I wanted, to have the freedom on the pitch to do what I was I thought it was the right thing to do, following my emotions, following my idea. And sometimes it worked, sometimes
it didn't. And managers have to trust you. And they have to believe in that.
You use the perfect word. Yeah. They need to believe me. Mm. I believe them when they told me, go in that position. Yeah. I would do that. But then when I'm in that position, just let me do my thing.
Going to Naples, I mean, I lived in Spain for 20 years and some of my best friends are Italians and they're Neapolitans. The scale of passion and opportunity and a step up for you going into Naples, if you're an Englishman trying to understand what that must have been like walking into for you, can you give us some sort of understanding of what that's like?
It was a huge move for me personally because it was my first experience, let's say, in the mainland. Going to a big club, there were a lot of obviously question marks. There were a lot of doubts. But again, as I said, my attitude has always been that I go there, I do step by step everything I need to do every day to set to the level. And you know, I'll fail. It's a challenge. It was a big challenge for me, but I had so much enthusiasm about the experience.
Did you have
so
any
much.
Fear? Did you have any fear going there? It's a massive step up, isn't it? In terms of size of clubs, leagues that you're playing in, expectation and passion.
No, never had a fear.
Never had any fear?
It's a good question. Nobody has asked me this. No. If I go back now, no, I didn't have fear. I was very quiet. I mean, my fears were more like, you know, I was very quiet, very timid, if I can say that.
Yeah. And just adjusting.
So maybe there was the relationship with these big people was there. Probably there was a kind of fear. Maybe how I would deal with Diego Maradona, with Careca. What do I do when I see him? What do I do when I see Careca, when I train with them? That was my concern. But regarding the pitch matters, no, not even for a second.
And inevitably, there is a massive intrigue about Diego Maradona.
Yes.
Some of it, from an English point of view, that has notoriety attached to it. But for most of us, it's because of the nature of the player that he was. I remember years and years ago, Gianfranco, my father took me to Wembley in 1980, and Maradona had just burst on the scene. Mm. And I had this, you know, this absolute sort of fan worship of Kenny Sampson. Kenny Sampson was the Arsenal left back. He'd played for the team, Crystal Palace, that I grew up supporting. Right. And it was the first time I'd ever seen a player leave Kenny Sampson on the floor repeatedly and endlessly. So Maradona was always an intriguing proposition. And of course, you saw this young player come through and we saw this world talent. So I'd like you to give us some sort of insight to your experiences with Diego Maradona, from what it was like to walk into a dressing room with him to how he was as a person on and off the field.
You know, sometimes you walk in a room and there are people.
Yeah.
And maybe there is somebody famous, but you don't know until you find out who he is. No. Mm-hmm. I think when you were walking in a room and there was Diego, everybody was aware of him. His presence was unbelievable.
Right.
It was really, really big, big presence. It was like something that this guy is doing... He's doing something in football that nobody does. This is the point. Diego used to do things that nobody was able to do. And so that gave him kind of aura.
Yeah.
And we as teammates, we were very well aware of that.
Yeah. So many times people talk about learning at the feet of masters. What kind of influence did that have on you?
I was so obsessed of him and the way I used to admire him so much as a player. That I used to look everything he was doing, how he was talking to the other teammates, how he was, what he was doing before. He used to have one thing, you know, he used to do the training session without tying his
shoelaces.
He used to do them leave the boots open.
Yeah.
He said that because of that you develop more balance, more ability, more you feel more freedom,
flexibility,
more freedom with the feet, right, more flexibility. To the point that I tried to do it as well.
Right.
It didn't work out very well the first day because I step on my
legs and tripped over.
Laces, and I fell on the floor. But that was the kind of influence I had. He had on me personally because I was so intense in looking at everything he did. He used to do on the pitch and off the pitch. But I think it was worth it because in the end, his influence really changed my style of play.
What was it like for the club when he departs? I'll tell you why. Because his parting quote was this: Napoli doesn't need to look for anyone to replace me. The team already has Zola. Now, that's a hell of a thing. And also, importantly, a hell of a thing for the media and the fans to pick up on. So no, what was
absolutely
your thought process and what was your reaction to that?
Well, first of all, I was very, very excited and glad about that.
Huge pressure though, right?
Well, but he helped the pressure. Honestly, on the pitch, I wasn't worried about that.
Right.
As I told you, my mind was always, as I said, as a frame of mind, I was always to be better, no? And didn't think about the pressure or not being successful. For me, it was playing football was so much fun that didn't cross my mind the other thoughts. Again, it was a right pressure. It was kind of okay. Well, so far I've done that. Now I am wearing Diego's shirt. I need to do more. What can I do to do more? Maybe instead of staying 10 minutes outside after training, I will stay 20 minutes and I will work on every part of my game, and I'll be, you know, I'll feel the task, because I knew that if I wanted to be at that level, I had to work more. So I always thank probably my family that gave me that type of mentality and way to think.
Your career at Napoli, I mean, you score 19 goals in the season that they win the league title, which is no mean feat, but it's the only league title that you win. Does that something that you look back on and think,
yes,
oh, that grates on me. I could have done more. I should have done more. I'd like to have done more.
No, 100%. You touch a very soft spot, if I can say that. Yeah, I regret because I could have done more than that. There were 2 years in which, one was at Parma.
Uh-huh.
We came very close to win the league. We came second behind Juventus. And one here with Chelsea when we came 4 points behind. I think it was United or Arsenal. I can't remember. We were 4 points.
Well, they were dominating English football at the time, so it would be one of the other. Wouldn't it,
yeah? To be honest, they were two strong teams, Arsenal and United. But that year we were very competitive. I know that I can tell you my qualities and my limits as a player. You know, as a player, I was very good when things were going bad because I knew there was a good reaction from things going bad. I had always a very good attitude in that moment. But sometimes when I was at the top, and this is something that I learned later, you know, you don't have to stop. You get to the top and then you need to really find motivations to go higher than that.
Right.
And I think it is in a couple of times I reflected it, and I think probably I didn't motivate myself enough to go.
In what situations?
With Chelsea, for example, right, the last when we won when we came third, or even years before. You know, I was very happy to get to a certain level. When I got to a level where I was recognized as a very good player, then I used to slow down my
really?
Motivation. Yeah, I remember that.
But that surprises me listening to you because you don't seem to be challenged by everything. And every step, you walk into a football club, so you go to Napoli, you take over from Diego Maradona. Next.
I got to be honest with myself.
Really?
No? I think, you know, I can't complain. I reached very good levels. I believe that I could have reached more because I had the abilities to do that. But I think sometimes, you know, being honest with myself, I go back. Probably I could have done more to motivate myself to go even beyond that.
Right.
I met incredible people, incredible players. Maldini,
yeah.
Baresi,
yeah.
You know, players Costa Curta, Albertini, they've been very successful. They've been very successful for many years, or like Manchester United players.
Because of their mental desire.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, they, for them to win wasn't enough. They had to go beyond. And probably if I go back in time and I would try to work on that.
Parma. Now, this seems to be a gear change for you at Parma. I mean, yes. If you look at statistics, I always think statistics are the beginning of a conversation, not the end of it. But when you look at them in isolation, your goal scoring frequency at Parma dramatically changes. You go from somebody that scores most of the time 1 in 3 to somebody that scores 1 in 2 at Parma. Yeah. Why is that? Is that the period where you think that you become your most prominent?
I think two reasons. First of all, the change of position. When I was playing in Naples, I was playing as a offensive midfielder with offensive duties, but also a lot of offensive, defensive
responsibilities.
Yeah. So when I moved to Parma, I play as a second striker.
Right.
Because I was playing along with Asprilla, actually, we adapted to play, you know, sometimes I was the main striker, sometimes he was the main striker. So all of a sudden, I moved from, you know, a more mid position to an offensive position. So
position.
I'm closer to the goal, and I have to develop the skills to do well closer to the goal, and that gave me the opportunity to use my qualities better. This was one key, and the other key was that obviously because of the position I had to work a lot on my ability, strategies, and I believe that I become a better player.
Was it an ambition for you to play in the Premier League? Because I mean, at the time, the perception in European football is that the Italian league is the place to go.
Oh,
you know, you've got 100%. Paul Gascoigne moved to Lazio in 1991. Seemingly, all the best players were playing in Italy. I spoke to Ruud Gullit. He did this show previously and talked about playing for Milan and wanting. He could have gone to Madrid, but he wanted to go to Italian football. You're coming the other way.
Yes.
So, was it a big ambition to play in the Premier League, or was it just an opportunity that presented itself? You had two boys that you knew that were already at Chelsea, and it came that way.
I think you said this spot on. I mean, the ambition, everyone wanted to come in Italy because in those years it was the best championship in the world. It was in my mind to have an experience abroad because I wanted to go and confront myself also abroad. There was this ambition that sooner or later I was going to do that. Chelsea was fascinating me. Yeah. I knew that the English Premier League was much more physical to the Italian one, and I was aware of that. It didn't bother me. Otherwise, I would have tried to look for another move, maybe Spain, where the football was similar. So I liked the challenge, and I loved the newspaper saying, "Well, Zola is not physical."
Not physically ready for this
league, is going to struggle. I really love that. I took it as a challenge. I wasn't so weak as people they were trying to describe myself.
In the English Premier League, it's strong, powerful, big, physically, robust players. Despite your obviously acknowledgement that you're quite capable of handling yourself, you're still a diminutive player in terms of small and size. Do you think you might have changed the minds of certain? Because obviously behind you comes players like David Silva, Bernardo Silva, and players that are not so big, not so physically. Do you think you might have been a little bit of an inspiration to make people think differently, that it isn't actually size that matters or physical presence, is about what you can do on a pitch?
No, correct. I mean, you can win games in different ways. You can be much stronger than the opposition, beat them up physically and win the game. Or you can be maybe technically more ability, pass the ball, don't let them come close to you and beat them by ability. I mean, you can win games in different way. From my point of view, I knew that if I was going to go for every challenge with the big boys in then, I was going to get to the hospital straight away. So I needed to find ways to be competitive with them. And for me, it was I was playing as a striker, but I never played along with the defenders. I used to pull out a little bit and get in the so-called pockets.
In the pocket, yeah.
In those years, I think the defenders were not used to mark players like myself, because, or maybe Bergkamp, because you know, I wasn't accepting the challenge from them. Mm. I wasn't accepting the physical impact to them. I was, you know, pulling away from them. Yeah. They would stay in line, obviously, because they had to stay in line. And they were thinking maybe, well, a midfielder is going to pick up Zola. But I would not stay on the midfield line. I would stay just behind. Then I can receive the ball. And when I receive the ball, I can turn and I can go against them with my ball. And when I'm going against a slow defender with my ball on my feet, I know I have an advantage. Mm. And the advantage is all mine. And this is what, you know, I gave you just an example of what was my thinking at that moment. So I never thought that my physicality was going to be a problem. Absolutely not.
What was it like? You played under three managers at Chelsea, Ruud Gullit, Gianluca Vialli, and Claudio Ranieri. What was that? What were they like individually and collectively? I mean, I met Ruud Gullit and did one of these with him, and I found him fascinating company. I've never seen someone laugh so much and want to have such a good sense of humour and had such humility about him in terms of where things he'd achieved. But what were your experiences like with those three guys?
There were three different managers. I think Ruud was more offensive-minded.
Yeah.
His goal as a coach was to set a team that play football offensively all the time. Mm-hmm. While Gianluca was the opposite. He was more Italian way. He was more concerned about the defensive phase of the game, where everyone had to defend, including the strikers. And Ranieri was a kind of mix between the two. He was a coach, while Ruud and Gianluca were players coach. They were starting their experience as a coach. Ranieri was a more established one, and he was somebody who used to be a little in between, try to play offensive, but also looking after the defensive side. That's probably how I would describe them.
Who did you enjoy playing for most?
Well, probably, I mean, the first year has been unbelievable. Because I really enjoy the first season. I play like, you know, with a lot of freedom, with a lot of flair. I remember that everything I thought I wanted to do was coming on the pitch. And that was because I had that kind of, you know, free of mind that would allow me to try everything. And luckily, many things were coming. So first year was fantastic, to be honest. But if I have to say the year I enjoyed the most is the last one, because I was 37 years old, and it was the most difficult one. Mm. Many people were saying that I was finished. And
one of your best seasons.
It's been my best season for sure. When I first came to the Premier League, I used to work 2 hours a day for training. I think the last season, I used to work 5 or 6 hours a day.
Right.
On my fitness, on my mental preparation. Yeah. But in the end, the result was one of the most, things that gave me satisfaction.
Yeah, the most most rewards. Yes,
absolutely.
Why'd you leave?
Well, I leave because my dream as a footballer was that one day I started from point A, which was Sardinia.
Yeah.
And then I went around and I gathered a lot of experience and not a knowledge. And my dream was to come back to my origins and share the knowledge with the place, with the people. And that was my dream. And do something significantly important for the people over there. That was my dream. And so not easy to do.
No.
Because I knew I was going to leave.
Yeah.
And, the best thing I did was exactly that.
Really?
Absolutely.
Because it's right on the time, isn't it? I think there's three things in English football that change the direction. I think the introduction of the Premier League.
Yeah.
The second thing was the arrival of Roman Abramovich. Yes. And you leave just as he's coming in the door. Is there any truth in the story that he thought he was buying Chelsea with you in it?
Yeah.
And then tried to get you to come back to Chelsea or buy you back from Calgary. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true, actually, because I left the club. I was in discussions to renew the contract because it wasn't easy for me. I knew, my desire, my dream was to do what I, in the end, I did. But on the other hand, I was living a reality where we were in Champions League and, I was living a place where I knew people appreciate me very much. So It wasn't an easy choice. So, yes, when he bought the club, he thought that I was part of the package,
right,
for sure. And but obviously, he didn't know about my intentions, and probably I didn't know him myself as well until the end. And I think 3 days before he bought the club, I had a verbal agreement with Cagliari that I would go.
Right, and you stuck to your word.
I stuck to my word, and wasn't easy because the day before Roman bought the club, Mr. Ken Bates called me and said, "Please don't sign anything because the club has been bought by a very, very powerful person, yeah. And you are 100% part of it." And I said, "Well, look, I can't do anything," and I stuck to my decision.
Yeah.
Yes,
I think I've missed a trick in this part. I should have asked you. The biggest cultural adjustment must have been walking into a bloody dressing room with Dennis Wise, mustn't it?
I think it's been one of the worst things that happened to me in a way, and one of the best at the same time. One of the best because he's been an amazing teammate. He's an amazing friend still.
He's in Como, yes.
We speak quite a lot. And so amazing on the pitch, fantastic. On the changing room, fantastic. The other is terrible. He got me doing everything bad. And I can't tell you right now, Simon, but he sent me throughout the city, same words that they were not proper words. But because my English was really, really bad at that time, I was trying to learn. And obviously, to learn, you have to listen to other people
and pick it up with them.
You know, pick up language.
And Dennis Wise was that example for you.
Oh, my goodness. He got me saying this phrase that I don't want to say here. And I for 1 week, I went around saying this word.
Is it bad language?
It is a bad language.
Really bad.
Bad language. And I didn't know. Honestly, I was totally unaware.
And you walked up to people saying it?
I walked, and I see these people looking at me in a strange way, like, and I didn't know until, you know, somebody told me in the end, after 1 week, unfortunately.
And, I nearly took Dennis to Palace in 2003. Yeah.
Well, it's the best thing you didn't buy.
I know. Yeah. I mean, he went to Millwall. He went to Millwall and ended up managing Millwall. And myself and Theo Pafitas used to call him Napoleon. But I like Dennis. But anyway.
No, he's a great.
He's a character.
Great character.
Can I move you on to Chelsea now and the situation as it is? I mean, I saw something that was attributed to you the other day where you're talking about the current owners and you said that they need to learn about the Premier League. What did you mean by that?
The policy of Chelsea in the last few years, they spend money.
Yep.
Well, but they big had that. They spend the big money. But what they did basically, they had always a core team, right? They had those four or five players that they were the core of the team, and they were big players because
Lampard, Terry,
Drogba, and Ivanovic,
yeah.
And what they did, actually, they built the team around this.
Yeah.
Because those players, they had the knowledge
and the experience. Yeah.
And the experience.
Yeah. And the character.
The personality. They know. They had the know-how to be successful, to be winners. And those players, they spread the know-how to the new ones. Then other young players, they came. Even many of them, they came also from the youth team. Mm-hmm. And because they were in that environment, they developed those abilities. And my doubt about the strategy, I don't know, it's very early days to say that because it's 2 years. But in football, you know, 2 years, they can be not enough sometimes. Especially if you buy a lot of young players.
But when you've come from a position of Chelsea being a dominant force in English football.
But that's the problem.
And you're now in a position where you're not.
But that's the problem,
that's
Simon. That's the problem. That's the main problem. The main problem is that Chelsea is not like a normal team. It's a team that has been so successful. Probably in the last 15 years in the Premier League is the most successful one
or one of them.
So when you take it into cohesion, then when the team goes so, the players, the new players, the new young players, they're not doing exactly what they expect.
You think they've got the balance wrong?
between buying young players with potential and having enough of a base of senior good pros that understand it.
I have no doubt. I think some of the players that they left, that they were important players because they had the know-how, they could have stayed longer because they needed to, you know, transfer that knowledge to the young ones. Because you can see right now, there are a lot of players that the last year they were so young but so good. Now they are kind of sometimes intimidated by this because it's a lot of pressure to play for Chelsea. Yeah. You know, you're not playing in a normal team where whatever you do is fine. No, you have to do something more. Yeah. And some of the players, even if they have a good ability, they're still developing. You know, they are still, they're not ready. They need time. They need to make mistakes. Yeah. And when they make mistakes, they need encouragement.
Yeah.
But in Chelsea, it's difficult because you need to come top four. Otherwise, it's a failure.
What are you making of the current reaction? I mean, I did something today on another show where the Chelsea Supporters Trust have written this awful note to the owners. Well, they'll think it's a great note telling them how shit they think everything is, right? And we've seen how the fans are booing players and booing Pochettino. I mean, what do you think to that?
Well,
I find it difficult.
Unusual, first of all.
Well, yeah.
Very unusual. Because
very destructive as well, I think.
Very, very unusual, very destructive. And, you know, it's difficult to see. You know, I've been in the club for 7 years. Not all the time the things went well.
No, of course.
We were in a bad, we had bad spells, but the club, the player, the supporters never booed us. Never, they always been close to us. So what we've seen this year is very, 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 very unusual. Whether it's fair, I don't know. Maybe not. But on the other hand, as we said, considering the level of success that the club has had in the last 10 years,
they're victims of their
expectation,
success.
It's natural. It's human that the people react like this. I think it should be taken not much notice of that because this is frustration, most of all. But above all, the players, the supporters, they're always behind. You know, they might be very, very unhappy and critical. I don't know if you
That's
say
right.
that.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are still behind the club, which is the most important thing.
Do you think Pochettino? I know it's a difficult one for you to comment on a fellow professional, but I'm going to try and get you to. I think Pochettino is a very good manager, and I think he gets you to a very decent position where you're very competitive. I have reservations whether Pochettino can transport Chelsea back to being a Premier League winning side. What's your view on Pochettino?
Well, I have exactly the same opinion that you have. When they appointed him, I thought he was the best manager for the task.
Yeah.
Because we were, as I said, we had a project. We had to bring in talent, young talent, and to develop them. And I believe that to do that job, Pochettino is the best one. Obviously, I didn't expect all these difficulties. Whether they are, whatever is the main problem, I don't know, because I'm not every day with them.
No,
and,
of course.
So in order to be more appropriate, you really need to be close.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, but I still believe that he was a very suitable
coach. He's a good
coach,
yeah. During this time, and my perception of you is that you are a very affable, very amenable, very pleasant, you know, good-natured person. All of those attributes.
Not all the time,
well,
Simon, I can promise.
I'm sure you're not, but that's my impression of you, which don't seem the ideal trait to become a football manager. You move into football management.
Yeah.
Was that always something you wanted to do? Was it a necessary progression, a natural progression?
No, it wasn't at all a natural progression. For when I retired for 1 year, I didn't do anything. And it was not my intention to do anything as a coach because I didn't think I was, I had the skills to do that. Whether I was right or wrong, I don't know. But I didn't want to do that. I was asked to do 1 year later than I retired. I was asked to be the second coach for the under-21s along with Casiraghi.
But you also, in your management career, and we'll pick them off, yeah, as I said at the beginning of this introduction, you had three challenging ownerships. In terms of you go into West Ham, you go to Watford and you go to Birmingham, and each one has a different reason for its own challenge. But you go into West Ham, you start brightly, but there's a change of ownership. I'm very well versed in David Sullivan and David Gold from their time in Birmingham. How was that relationship for you from the outset? I mean, I think they came in talking about Zola's not going anywhere. We have ambitions of being a Champions League side. And that relationship develops how for you?
I don't know. I remember, I think all started where, I think the second year we were going through difficult problems, difficult moments. We were not performing as well as we did the last year.
Right.
We had to sell important players like Craig Bellamy, and people that they come, they didn't perform as well. So we were going some problems, but obviously, the new ownership were close, and at the same time,
but they're also coming out with things like, "You're too nice to deal with the rigors of football." That's not hugely helpful, is it?
Yeah, they were telling sometimes that I was too nice, and they were criticizing the player that they should do more. And I really openly criticize David Sullivan for that, because yep. I said, "Well, I mean, whether they are." Good or not, we need to do the war with them. So it's not necessary to criticize them too much.
But what about the too nice comments? I mean, I said it to you at the beginning of this section. I said to you, for me, you're a very pleasant, affable, amenable, amiable, good-natured person. And these aren't the traits that often are the cases with managers. He's working with you and he's saying you're too nice for the rigors and the brutality of the football management world. I mean, how does that can't sit very well with you?
No, I didn't like him. I didn't like very much, and I still don't like. You know, it's everyone deals with his own abilities. The best way to deal with the players is to be yourself. You being yourself, you have some things that the players may like, some that they don't like. But in generally, you know, if you are yourself, they respect you. And I think that sometimes work the team didn't play well, but the respect that they had for me has never been in doubt. And the respect I had for them obviously was the same. So, and they appreciated that. If I was being something different, I think I wouldn't have been so effective.
You leave West Ham, right? The relationship goes the way it goes. From you being their man.
Well, Sullivan, forgive me if I interrupt you.
No, you go.
He's been very critical and one time very, very unfair, and he lacked a little bit of class when I was struggling with another team, and he was criticizing still my decisions for what I allegedly did when I was playing for when I was coaching West Ham, and I think he's been very unfair. And never replied to him publicly, but it is an opportunity. So, you know, I understand he's got his own agenda, his own way to
do things. I can trump that because of my battles with Sullivan. When my team were at the top of the Championship getting promoted to the Premier League and his team, Birmingham, were getting potentially relegated, he went out in the papers, him and David Gold, and said, if there's a God, there's no way Crystal Palace will get promoted and Birmingham will get relegated. So we have similar experiences not the most classy of observations.
Well, maybe he forgets that when I was at West Ham, we struggled the second year when they were the owners. But in the end of the day, we stayed in the Premier League. Yeah. 1 year later, they got relegated.
Yeah.
So in the end, I think, myself, I didn't criticize. I was actually very disappointed because they went down. Mm. When he came out with some comments or when I was struggling with Birmingham.
With Birmingham, yeah.
It was very unfair and I think completely out of place.
Mm. You jump out of the frying pan into the fire when you go to Watford and the Pozzos. I have mixed emotions. I'm one of the people that actually defends the Pozzos because I don't think Watford have a God-given right to be in the Premier League. And I think the fact they've been there more often than teams like Nottingham Forest and Leeds and Sheffield Wednesday and other relatively significant English clubs. What's that like going into Watford, knowing that potentially, here's a stat that you might not know. Mm. Did you know that you've got the fourth best win record in the history of Watford and you've got the third best win record in the history of the 17 managers that the Pozzos have had. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know the numbers, but I knew that the first year we were very good. We had a very low budget. I mean, I think we were one of the teams that probably middle-low budgets. And despite that, we played very well. We lost the final against
Crystal Palace,
your team.
Indeed,
Crystal
you
Palace,
did.
In a very painful game. But I think they're here. The way we play football, that team play football with a lot of young players was quite remarkable. It's one of the years I enjoyed the most, probably. It's along with the first year where they were them. We played very well, very offensive, very good-looking football and very effective. We were very unlucky, to be honest. We Watford, we were very unlucky because we could have gone up straight away without going to the playoffs.
Yeah. Why did you resign, by the way?
I resigned because things were not going the way they were going the year before. I think the team has been changed a lot from the previous year, and probably I made a mistake in changing some of the players, very good players. And so I resigned because I wasn't happy how things were going, and so I took responsibilities of the expectation of the team, of the club, of the team. The supporters were different. So when I see things were not working, well, I took responsibilities. I said, maybe it's better for somebody else to try to do better.
You wanted to be unique and be the only manager to resign rather than be fired.
Maybe I knew I was going to get
absolutely.
It. No, Simon, I think it's not that. I think it's that, I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but I felt like that I wasn't deserving to be there. Maybe I wasn't.
You thought you weren't deserving to be there.
No, I wasn't deserving to be there. I wasn't doing the job properly, probably like when I was at Birmingham. I wasn't doing a job that I was happy. And so I said, why do I have to stay and wait for them to sack me and give me the money? I'm not here for the money. If they're not happy, I'm not producing results, and they're not happy, why I have to stay?
Given the personality that I think you are, why now would you be kind of giving up? It doesn't strike me as your character. You don't let other things overcome you. You've risen to every single challenge. You don't care about taking Maradona's shirt. Why are you saying to me in this conversation, I wasn't doing my job?
Well,
it sounds like giving up. If I'm being honest, it sounds like giving up.
No, I understand that. Well, I think as a coach, my primary objective was to go into a team that was not necessarily the best and try to make a difference for the players, improve them, make them better. And, that was my ambition. Sometimes I instead of stepping into a team and changing the players, I would stick to the players that they were in that team, even if they're not doing well, and try to improve them and play the way I wanted them to play, good football and flair football or whatever. I felt that sometimes it worked, but towards the end, it wasn't working anymore. Probably I would have had the courage to change myself and to do different choices and maybe get rid of players. And I didn't like to do that.
Right.
Because my main mission was to go there and have maybe Simon Jordan and get him from his level to a better level. That was my dream. I didn't become a coach to win titles.
So the guy accusation has merit.
Probably. I don't know. Maybe it was my limitation. No? Right. But my goal as a coach was to be that type of coach. A coach able to make better players and not just win trophies just because of that. Again, as I said, maybe that was my limitation. I should have changed my beliefs.
You surprised with what's happening at Birmingham? It seems to be history repeating itself a little bit, doesn't it? You came into Birmingham after Gary Rowett. I think the situation with Gary Rowett is more complicated than people were led to believe in terms of his departure.
So.
But you've also got a similar situation with John Eustace being taken out at Birmingham because somebody wanted to get Wayne Rooney's autograph. Are you surprised that history repeats itself in these situations?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, the John Eustace situation got to me because I thought it was unfair. I, By the way, John Eustace was my player when I was at Watford.
Okay.
He didn't play much because he was injured, but he was an amazing captain. Even when he didn't play, he was amazing, really, to have him. Great player. And so I was not very happy when they did that because he deserved to be in the job. And they paid a very high price for what they did.
Yeah, got what they deserved. Back into Chelsea as assistant manager, Sarri. You like assistant manager's roles? Are you happier in that space?
No, I'm happy. I'm happy. I really enjoy that. I mean, it's probably I wouldn't have done for anybody else other than Sarri.
Yeah.
Maybe Guardiola would have gone.
Okay. Yeah, well, fair enough. Yeah.
I would have loved to be there.
Or maybe Klopp.
Like many or Klopp, or as you said. No, but anyway, I was happy for two reasons. First of all, that I was very happy to work with him because I liked him as a coach. What was doing at Napoli was quite remarkable.
Yeah.
I like his style of play, his style of coaching. So I was very happy to be there for that reason. And secondly, because I was going to be, you know, I was going back to Chelsea, and that was another dream fulfilled for me.
Sarri is, in my view, an authoritative figure.
Mm.
Yes?
It is a very, very particular person. Yeah. And, you know, it's controversial sometimes, but a very, very interesting figure.
But strong.
Very, very. He has very strong points.
Yeah.
But I believe also there are some weaknesses as well. But it's generally talking, he's a very good coach.
Yeah. But we all have weaknesses. But for me, he's an authoritative figure. He's someone that commands and demands respect and attention from his players. But I bet he didn't bank on Kepa's behaviour in the cup final.
Yeah.
I mean, walk me through that, Gianfranco. I mean, from an outsider, I'm watching it. I'm watching a goalkeeper that's going down twice with cramp. Then I'm watching an authoritative, strong manager that expects a response from his players saying, you off.
Yeah.
We've got Willy Caballero, were you standing next to him, stripped off, ready to go. What the hell's going on?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think you need to know that Kepa the whole week wasn't feeling 100%. He had a problem with the leg.
Yeah.
And so when he went down there, actually, we thought that he was the problem coming back. And so we thought there was a serious problem. Actually, what was happening is that Kepa was trying to lose a little bit of time because we were obviously going towards the penalties. He was struggling, and so therefore, you know, he wanted to lose time. But I think then we decided to make a change.
Yeah,
we knew Caballero; he was a good player, also for penalties, and we decided to make a change. But obviously, Kepa didn't understand.
Yeah, this is the part I'm curious about. Whether he understood it or not.
Well, at the beginning, he didn't understand, Simon. But then he realized it. But he didn't want to come off.
But have you ever seen a situation like that?
No, very rarely.
Yeah.
I think probably at a certain point, the referee came to me and I was dealing with the situation and I took responsibility for that. I should have been stronger with the referee and tell him to go there and take him
out. You're going to take responsibility.
Oh, yeah, I'll take a little bit of responsibility.
Really?
Because in communicating with the referee, I should have been strong. But then I said, maybe we will do next.
Okay.
And
pick at that for a second? It doesn't really matter what the player understands, does it?
No,
it matters what the manager wants.
Yeah, correct.
So I'm trying to understand how we've got this authoritative figure that demands and commands respect from his players and expects a response, and a goalkeeper that doesn't get the memo and doesn't understand why he's being taken off. But really and truly, it's not a democracy. You're not asking for his opinion. By the way, can I ask if you want to come off?
No, exactly.
You're coming off, right? How does that manifest itself in that situation, and how are you guys dealing with it, and how much damage does that do to Sarri as a result of it?
Well, I think it's obviously that was, you know, the pressure was building because there was time wasting. The situation was getting out of the contest. Anyway, the player believed that didn't want, that we thought that he was injured, but actually we wanted to change. At the end, the player insisted on that line. in the end of the day, he made a big mistake, and he apologized for that, and he paid the cost for that. But probably in that moment, what we could have done, we could have sent, for example, the captain, Spiliqueta, to speak to him and send to come over.
Yeah.
Because he was talking from there. We were talking from here. We were saying, come over. He was saying, no, I'm fine. And in the end, we're losing time. And the referee was putting pressure on us. What would we do? In the end, we didn't do that. And he came out so badly for the public.
Yeah.
And as I told you, maybe I made a mistake in communicating to the referee. I should have been more strong to the referee and say, well, stop. We need to take him out. Anyway, he happened like that. Kepa realizes his mistake, and he's paid for that, and so on. He hasn't been very nice, to be honest, to see from outside. But you know, sometimes on the pitch, you do mistakes, and
of course,
and the reaction sometimes is not.
What was the reaction? Do you get any feedback? I mean, I as a former owner looked at it through the prism. I could only look at it at one thing: the player needs to be doing as he's told.
Yeah.
But really and truly, where is my manager and where is my assistant manager and why aren't they doing what it takes to get him off the pitch?
No, it's true.
And
it's true. We couldn't be stronger, Simon, but in that moment we
made a judgment.
You know, I made a judgment. We said we carry on and then we deal with Kepa later. So as we did.
Right.
To be honest, he didn't leave anything behind.
Any residue, yeah.
No, there was no problem. The players realised and they didn't take
everybody
too much
moved
notice.
On. What about you and management? You've done nothing since 2018. Anything? Is that you done? Do you want to do something else?
It's for the moment. I am very happy for what I do. You know, it's for me being a footballer and a manager. It meant to take a lot of time for myself and. I sacrifice attention and other things that are very important for my life as well.
So family.
My business and other stuff, you know. And, you know, I realize that for me probably is the moment to take care of that.
Right.
And I'm very happy with that.
Good for you. Last question. Italy, leading up to the Euros. Mancini's deserted ship, gone and taken the Saudi money. It's not been the smoothest ride recently. I mean, obviously, I'm sitting there as an Englishman that got beaten in the Euros last time by you lot. But what's your expectations for Italy?
I have a lot of confidence in the coach that we have right now.
Do you?
Spalletti, I think, is the best we can offer at the moment.
Even though he's screaming at the players for PlayStation nonsense.
Well, he was right. So
he's right.
He's
absolutely
right. He's
right.
Too much.
Yeah.
I think less time on the play, maybe doing something else more constructive. Would
absolutely
be better.
Right. Well said.
No doubt about that. Having said that, I like him. He works very well on the pitch. He's very good in with the player's head. I think he has all the ability to really do a good job. That is the good part. The bad part is it comes from the team itself. I think the quality could be much better than it is.
Right.
Unfortunately, as you know, the level of our quality, especially from midfield onwards, from the striker, he hasn't been good enough. Mm. We didn't have as many players as we used to have in that position. We had at least four or five top Euro world players, and now we are really lacking. And without that type of players, it's quite difficult to play the type of football we want to play and be successful. As simple as that.
But what's your hopes? What do you think?
Well, it depends. It depends how they start. If they get a good rhythm, the Italian teams, you know, they've always been like that. If they get momentum, then they become dangerous. Even if they're not the best team, like it happened in the past. Mm. If they get the momentum, they're going to be a problem for everyone.
If Italy were to draw or to reach the final against England, who would you honestly expect to win? Given the state of the two sides now and where they both are in terms of the players that are available and the performances in recent times?
If it goes down to ability and England plays their best football, we cannot win because they are a better team. They are better players.
Yeah.
They have better players, not better team. It's different. They have better players on the pitch. In every position, I mean, if you look at the team right now, and I don't want to add pressure to the pressure they already have, but honestly, when you look at the team that England has got right now, in every position, they have a very strong option, and they have cover. And so, therefore, if they, like every team, if they can manage to find a little bit of momentum, the only team who can stand them probably right now is France. And even if France is the best, I'm not sure that they're better than England. So I rate them very much, and I'm really hoping that they can just play at their best.
Yeah.
Because from one reason or for the other, they didn't manage to do that previously. There was always something missing, and from the equation. And I hope that this is going to be the right time.
Chance. Gianfranco, thank you very much for being so upfront with
me. It's been a pleasure, Simon. Thank you for having me.
Upfront with me, Simon Jordan, is brought to you by William Hill. For new weekly shows, subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find audio episodes on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly.